Hey, Dee, now that we're both in our 60s, should we put a tagline on the podcast that says, two gardeners in their 60s?
Do you think that makes us sound smarter or something? Maybe it just makes us sound older.
Probably right. Let's skip it. Let's move on. Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
And I'm Dean Ash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden on several acres out in the country.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want others to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Dee. On that dirt part, I was going to say, we're probably, to youngins, we're older than dirt.
I like it. So what are you doing in your garden?
Okay, so I had kind of a slow week in the garden. You know, I did mow and stuff, but I finally potted up my pansies, and I'm a little embarrassed how many days they sat on the front porch in their little containers.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Went down to the greenhouse and bought some beautiful mums, just barely showing color, and planted those at the neighborhood entrance, which is what I do for my neighborhood, although they pay me back for the flowers. I did some tidying up of the various containers around here, and so, you know, I was kind of busy. I had garden club on Monday and stuff, so I didn't get as much done in the garden as I would have liked to.
There you go. Well, you got a lot done, actually. You're not giving yourself enough credit.
I know. And I do. I didn't buy mums for myself, and I thought, you know what? I'll just go get me a couple of mums. And what I like to do, which isn't a great thing to do, I just plunk them in some of those bushel basket things, maybe with a brick in the bottom to push it up. I don't even repot them.
I don't repot mums either, unless that's not true. Occasionally I'll repot them into terracotta pots, the three that I put in my front shady bed, because I just think it looks cool.
Yes.
Not always. You know what I mean?
Not always. So tomorrow I think I'm headed down to the greenhouse again. Big surprise.
Big surprise. It's that time of year. So in my garden, I bought pansies, although it's still too hot. I told myself that they'll be happier in my garden in partial shade than they will be in the nursery pots. So it's okay.
That is the truth.
And so I need to write a blog post, I think, about what it takes financially for me to run this garden. I'm not going to tell people prices, but I can tell them like how many bags of mulch it takes, how many flats of pansies I buy for the front.
Yeah.
I think that'd be interesting. And I'll do that right after I do this Monarch post that I'm working on. But there's a talk tonight on Facebook. So if anybody's from this part of the world wants to listen, I mean, people from Indiana could too, but it's primarily focused on Oklahoma. Go to the Okies for Monarchs page or group. And it shows that there's this big talk tonight by another professor about Oklahoma and monarchs. So
by the time this comes out, though, tonight will be 2 days ago. Now, I know this time warp thing is...
Oh, it always throws me. Yeah, so never mind, people. You can't listen to it. It's already over with.
Well will they record it? Will they record it and replay it?
I don't know. They might. I hope they do.
Well, if they do, you provide me with a link, and I will put it on there.
Sounds good.
But remember,
Today is Wednesday, but it's really...
Well, today is 2 days from now.
Right. I forget.
Okay.
Anyway, the point of that was I'm going to go listen to that before I do my Monarch post to add to what we already talked about.
There you go.
I also am going to buy... Oh, that's the next part. That's the garden commissions. I planted my front pots. I was really tired when I got home with all the plants yesterday, but I just pulled out the stuff that died and stuck in the stuff that was alive. And then I watered
it. That works.
And then I cleaned off my front walkway right before we started talking to each other. That's why my hair is all sweaty and wet. And let's see. What did I put in my front pots? I put ornamental peppers, crotons, which we talked about at length last year because you had never heard of them. It's a tropical...
I had, but I never planted them.
Ah, that's what it was. And then yellow snapdragons, which normally I don't like that yellow, but it looks really good with the crotons. and a real pretty blue kale. And so, and I already had in there two heucheras on each side of the pots because the pots are really big.
Yeah.
And so I swept off the walkway in the front, and I'm getting a new fall rug and wreath, but they're not here yet. But I got to tell you what my wreath says because you'll like it.
Okay. Tell me.
Ready?
Yeah.
Oh, my gourd, you're here.
That is hilarious.
I knew that would make you laugh.
Oh, my gourd, that's
funny. And I'm keeping my six little... Isn't that funny? Oh, my gourd. I'm also keeping my six monarch caterpillars alive, and it's not easy because they eat a lot in the fourth and fifth instars, but they're at five instars. In fact, they're munching right now. They're in that crazy, I'm starving to death phase. Hungry, hungry caterpillar.
Somebody should write a book That's like it. That.
Yeah, I think Eric Carle did.
Oh, okay. Let me get a quote going for the first topic.
Perfect.
Gardening is the art that uses flowers and plants as paint and the soil and sky as a canvas. Elizabeth Murray.
She's absolutely right.
That is absolutely right. And isn't she the one that did a bunch of, spent a year at Monet's garden in Giverny?
Yes, I'm almost sure that's her.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That Elizabeth Murray.
Yeah, very nice.
And she was the first woman who was allowed to work in Monet's garden.
That is interesting.
And she wrote a year, I think she wrote a year in Monet's garden.
Yes.
So, we wanted to talk about, for our flower topic this week, what are we doing in our flower gardens to make things easier?
We're supposed to be making things easier?
Yes, because we are over 60.
Well, you're just 60.
And this will help people under 60, too.
It's really for anybody. So, yeah.
It's for anybody.
And I had this one garden talk that I do. I always tell people to size the garden for the resources you have, and sizing is done not physically, but also by the kinds of plants that you choose, the tools that you get to use, and the help that you hire.
Yes, and what you can afford.
Exactly.
Because maybe in your 30s, you could do more than you could do in your 50s.
Probably.
I mean, it's the truth. But I will say this, when you get into your 50s and 60s, you work smarter.
You do.
I try never to touch things twice. I use tractors with carts on the back of them. Some people use other vehicles. I mean, it's a big garden. So I used to use a hand cart everywhere because, well, I was 30. And I still use my hand cart, but I like those tractors too.
Yeah. And the conundrum is, you know, you're in your 30s and you're working and you barely have time to get out in the garden on the weekends mm-hmm. or whatever. And now we're older. We have more time to spend in the garden, but we may not have as much oomph as we used to have.
Right. Or you have little kids in your 30s.
Exactly.
And so you have very small blocks of time. And I think that's why I got pretty efficient. I can weed a bed faster than any help I hire, you know, if I do hire help.
Yeah.
Because I just have done, for one thing, I know the garden, so it's really easy. All right. So I was feeling very discouraged at the end of the end of the summer, which we're at the end of the summer right now, but let's say at the end of August, beginning of September, because, you know, it was a really hard summer between the grasshoppers, the heat, the Japanese beetles, the heat. It was hard. And I had trouble with my hoses. Well, 103 for days on end is a lot.
Well, you mentioned it a couple of times. I just wanted to verify.
So I was thinking about getting rid of a couple of my garden beds that are out that face the street.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Because those are the hardest ones to get to.
Yeah.
And I'm also, but now the pink muley grass is blooming. So, you know, I'm back to, do I really want to do that? So I don't know what I'm going to do. But I am going to replace those hoses that rotted because I had to repair them again this weekend. I was like, I hate you all. Isn't that funny to hate a hose? And then I may quit being a beekeeper because I really don't have the time to devote to it like I should.
So here's an idea for you, Dee.
What's that?
So do you think that somebody who is a professional beekeeper, you could tell them, hey, you can keep some hives out here. Here's what I've got growing and stuff. And then they come and take care of the hives for you. And basically,
I've thought about that.
You give them the space, they take care of it all, and in exchange, hey, throw me a few jars of honey every once in a while.
Right, because I don't need 25 jars of honey, which is what I got this year.
No, you don't. You need like a couple.
Because I'm not gonna sell it, and I don't, eat that that much honey. Yeah, I actually have thought about that, but this is the other thing I thought of, Carol.
What's that?
I like walking my property because I don't like to walk my neighborhood because of all the big dogs. And it's very hard to walk your property with beehives.
Oh, because there's bees all over.
Because, well, there's bees by their hives. They protect their hives. Oh. So I have to walk behind them and hope that they don't sting me when I come back around. Now, I will say they haven't stung me, but, you know, I don't really want to get stung. Anyway, I'm just thinking about that. I've got tons of bee equipment that I could sell. And I'm down to one colony, I think. And when it cools down this week, I'm going to check them and make sure the other colony's okay. I don't think they are. All right. So that's one thing I've thought about. Now say the next thing.
So the next thing really is about tools. And I'm your tool queen, as we all know. And there are now ergonomic tools out there. And I haven't really gotten into the ergonomic tools, but I know they have some that they are lighter to use, but they still are heavy duty enough that you could actually do something with them. And so, you know,
they usually have fiberglass handles. Yep. And they usually have, for one thing, like a de-handled shovel is easier to handle than a pole shovel, things like that. And they've also got ones with round handles or radius handle. There's different types. Those are just shovels. I mean, but almost all of them have fiberglass,
right,
which makes them a lot lighter weight and easier to carry. I also have a lady's shovel. Do you have a lady's shovel?
You know what? I do not have a lady's shovel, but I have a kid's shovel that I have used on occasion.
Right.
And it's not a toy kid shovel. It's actually,
it's a real shovel.
A real shovel. But the other thing I was thinking about is the pruners and stuff. There are pruners that work better with hands like mine, which are not as strong as they once were. I got to admit.
Once were.
Yeah. And so yeah. I use a smaller pruners, and I took a couple pairs to, and you actually turned me on to these. And I'll have to put a link from Amazon. Yeah, that little one you bought this spring.
Oh, I love that thing.
I went and bought
The spring.
Yeah,
spring handled. This is it. The Corona Tools one or the other one?
It's the other one.
Here's the Corona one.
That one's a good one.
I keep it in a. Are you thinking of the the other cute one that I bought that has the green handles?
I will include a link because I have one that's more traditional pruner and one that I would call snippers. I took those to Garden Club, and I think people just. Like pulled up Amazon and a couple of ladies actually ordered them because they're like $14 for two.
Yeah, they're cheap.
And
they're cheap.
But they're smaller. And so if you're just doing some light pruning and touching up, I find they're much easier to use.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put a link to those in the show notes. I love those things.
So I keep all of my pruners. Well, not all of them. You know, I have a lot of pruners.
Yeah.
But I keep a bunch of my pruners in a little flower pot by my back door. And that way, I always have them available. You know, other people keep pencils in theirs. I keep mine in there. I keep my pruners in there, all different sizes. And then they're right by the back door. I can go straight out and snip some things for 20 minutes. I like all of those that are really short, sharp.
Yeah.
Those floral snips are fabulous. And, I mean, they won't work for, like, if you're pruning roses for spring, they won't. There are two. You'll need some loppers that are short, and you'll need some other stuff. But for just deadheading, they're super great. The big scissors are great for if you're doing the Chelsea chop at the beginning of the year. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do to make your life simpler. And one of the things, you brought up Amazon. I was in a talk at one of the Daylily shows, and they brought up one of the guys brought up the Spearhead Spade gardening shovel, and we'll link to it. And it is fabulous. That thing will dig out a daylily clump or a perennial clump faster, like lickety split, because it's shaped like what you would need.
Yeah.
And at the top, it holds onto that clump of whatever you're digging out, and you can just yank it right out of there.
I'm going to look
that
up.
And that's how I got all those daylilies out so
fast. I need more tools, Dee.
There's also a shark shovel that everybody swears by, too, that cuts through perennials, but I don't have it. So let's talk about our favorite type of tool, though.
The battery-operated tools that we have.
Let's all say amen.
Amen.
I mean, really. I mean, really.
I have the Works brand, WORX. And before we got on the show, you talked me into getting a little chainsaw. I am going to order one.
The battery-operated chainsaw, we have two of them now because they saved our lives when we had that horrible ice storm. Yep. Because all of my crepe myrtles died to the ground after that long cold period. I got out there with that battery-operated chainsaw and whipped right through them. And then I used the crepe myrtle branches to stake things, which people don't always think about. I mean, they always think about willows, but willows sprout. Crepe myrtle branches don't, that's good. Which is good. So battery-operated trimmers, we've talked about them before. I think the trimmer has changed my life with the boxwoods.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Because my friends still cut them by hand, a lot of them, because they're more particular than I am. Those trimmers still do a good job. And you can even trim those bushes when you got red wasps in them if you're on the right side of the bush.
There you go.
Because the wasps cannot figure out what you're doing.
Very good.
They don't realize you're the end of the trimmers.
That's awesome. That is awesome, dude.
So getting ready to go out after we're finished, I'm going to go outside and take my battery operated string trimmer. And I am going to string trim up some weeds that are driving me insane.
I love my string trimmer. I was telling you that because I don't have to get out the electric cord and plug it in and drag that thing around, I trim every time I mow. And it doesn't take but 10 or 15 minutes because I always trim. So everything is usually pretty trim anyway. And I love that thing.
And you aren't carrying around an electric cord with you.
I love that thing.
Or trying to start one of those stupid little engines.
I already gave up on
that. My husband,
yeah, I gave up on those gas
engines. Is so good at.
No, I hate those.
But I am not good at, and I don't want to pull it. When you use the battery operated stuff, you just have to push two buttons.
Exactly.
And you're off to the races.
Exactly.
As long as you've charged your battery. And we always keep our batteries in the garage, and we just charge them as soon as we're done.
Yep.
So we always have a battery.
That's what
ready.
I do too.
Okay. So have we said enough of how much we love those battery operated?
I think we have.
And I don't care what brand you get.
I don't either.
Get Black & Decker.
Just get all the same brand of your tools so that you can use the same battery pack on all of them.
Right, because you want to be able to switch them in and out. And most of them take the same size. Occasionally, I mean, we have the drills, and some of the drills take a different size. And the shape is different. Okay, so, and also, battery-operated drills. You will never have to screw in a screw again.
Exactly.
Zing, zing.
Zing, zing.
It's so easy.
Zing.
Okay, so in Oklahoma, I'm going to say install drip irrigation, and that can be soaker hoses. I watered the whole back garden with soaker hoses for years and actually timers. I will say this year, the soaker hoses that I bought for the cut gardens 3 years ago are rotten. I just patched them again for the 10th time this year. So I will be installing Netafim drip in those deals. And there's nothing to installing it, seriously. It's very easy to install. You might need help. Like if you're doing a big irrigation system, you might need help. But you can use Netafim tubing with timers. It's just a matter of having the right connection.
That is true.
So I love it for here. I think it's a very efficient way to water. It doesn't waste water. And we're in a drought, so we need to be careful with water.
We do.
We're always in a drought. Except in May when it rained 1 million inches.
And then
we weren't drought.
The other thing you put on here is the garden kneeler. And I didn't look this up, but I'm assuming this one has handles.
Look it up now.
What?
Look it up now.
I'm not going to look
cool.
it up. It has handles, I'm assuming,
Carol.
To use to get up with.
Yeah. It's got handles to get up and down with, and it's also a bench. So you flip it over, and those handles are a bench.
Yes.
And then you flip it back over, and it's a kneeler with handles so you can get up and down, and it's easy. And it also comes with pockets to put your tools in.
That is
hand
nice.
Tools. And I'm telling you, in your knees, after a while, your knees get tired. And I'm not wearing knee pads because I wear shorts in the garden all summer because it's hot here.
It is hot there.
So I'm not going to wear knee pads. I have not bought that kneeler yet, but I'm thinking about it. I might buy it this week. And then let's talk about gardening in containers and raised beds.
Yeah, containers and raised beds are much easier to plant in because my raised beds are on the ground, but yours are much higher. But bringing them up to you rather than you kneeling down to them. And then also, here's the other thing. Think about what you're planting. And if you're like in love with tropical plants and you're hauling those things in and out of the basement or wherever you store them for the winter.
You're crazy. That's what you
yes.
are.
Yes. And I'm reminded Sidney Edison wrote a book called Gardening for a Lifetime, How to Garden Wiser as You Grow Older. And
that's a good book.
She talked about, you know, she had the tropicals up and down the basement steps. And at some point you're like, this ain't worth it. And so you give those to a younger gardener and then you figure out something. And I think she ended up with a bunch of daylilies.
Or just grow them just grow them for fun in the summer and let them go.
That's true.
Which is what I do.
That is true.
I just put those tropicals are not expensive. They're the same price as an annual, and you get a lot more bang for your buck. So, and here I know what she was talking about. She was talking about like cannas and stuff.
Cannas. Well, here big banana plants, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So you have to bring in banana plants here. But you do not have to bring in cannas most of the time unless you're growing Tropicana because it's a tropical
one. Well, I heard her speak, and she just tells it's just a nice story about how she went from one type of garden to another type of garden because, you kind of, I'll call it graduate on to other things rather than giving up something.
Well, I've definitely done that. I'm not going to grow as many roses. I don't think I'm going to grow any new roses next year. I'm not going to be tempted. I'm going to do my best. I know. Because you know what? I thought about how long it took me to do all of that pruning last year. Think about that.
That is true.
So I've done a lot more prairie plants, and I'm just as happy, and I don't have to work as hard.
Great.
Just saying.
One last thing, because we're going to move on to our next topic, is I always tell people just – if you can afford to, you hire out stuff that is exhausting to do or potentially dangerous. And like spreading mulch can be exhausting. So hiring some young kids to do that, you'll be amazed how fast they'll grow. And using a chainsaw.
Yeah, just got to watch them.
I always said using a chainsaw was something I would always hire out if it needed that. But then I think I could get that battery operated one. And it's like, not like I'm trying to chop up a couple of ricks of firewood. It would just be for some, I know exactly where I'd use it.
Pruning.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could use it for certain things that are a problem in your garden that you just don't, you know, like if you have a limb that's an issue.
Well, I have a reciprocating saw that I put a pruning blade on, and that works pretty well. But every once in a while, mm-hmm. it's like, that's a little much for that saw.
Yeah. I'm telling you that it's really sharp and it's a great chainsaw. All right. And then we also want to link to our friend Tony Gattoni's book, The Lifelong Gardener, Garden with Ease and Joy at Any Age. That's another one that has great tips.
She has great tips.
On
gardening. She's had a lot of back problems. And so if you have back problems, get her book. She has a lot of great advice in there.
That's good. All right. Ready for the next quote?
Do it.
A garden is always a series of losses set against a few triumphs, like life itself, Mace Harton.
That's true.
You put this one in here.
I did.
I hadn't seen this one before.
Snuck that in on you.
It's perfect for this.
Well, yeah, because in the vegetables, there are triumphs and there are failures. But this week, we are going to talk all about our peppers. And I just want to give out a shout out to a couple of peppers. And I know you want to give a shout out to a couple of them.
Right, go first.
I got to give a shout out to candy cane, which is a variegated leaf, and the peppers are variegated as well. They are so pretty,
beautiful.
And they actually, I'm not a big pepper eater, but they taste pretty mild and pretty good. So candy cane is in the permanent rotation in my garden.
Okay, I think candy cane should be in everybody's garden if they like sweet peppers that are like sort of like sweet Italian frying peppers,
and
but a little
they don't
bit
get ginormous. Like
no, they stay small.
The other green pepper I always grow is one called Big Bertha. It's an old variety. I gotta admit, it is a big bell pepper, and I grow it for the name because if you can't garden with Big Bertha, what's the point of summer?
I haven't grown Big Bertha in years, but. I say you, that's good. You do that.
We both listed Cubanelle as a great pepper.
Oh my gosh, I love Cubanelle. I put it on cheese nachos yesterday.
The nice thing about it is it's a thinner wall, as they say. It's not as thick as some. And so it's really good for cooking. And I think it was Rachel Ray made the Cubanelle kind of popular as a cooking pepper.
Maybe.
So.
It's mild. It's delicious. You can use it in anything. I mean, I used it in some beans the other day.
Yeah, it's a great thing. And then I got some trial peppers. And I
from Ball Hort.
From Ball Hort. And I just wasn't reading the description well enough. I put them out in the garden. I thought, these aren't getting very big. They're compact plants.
Oops.
They're only supposed to get 9 inches tall, a foot wide. But they're called peppers from heaven. And there's a red one, a yellow one, and an orange one. And I got all of them. And
fun.
Really, for a tiny
like
plant.
From heaven.
Huh?
Like pennies from heaven.
Yes, peppers from heaven. But they actually have a pretty good sized pepper for such a small plant.
Cool.
So I thought, after I looked at it, I thought, oh, I should have put them in a container up on the patio. Dumb me. So
that's okay.
They're good.
You know what happens is you get all of these plants all at once.
And you're like, I just got to plant this. Like, I just got to plant this.
You got to get these in because you're trying to start the garden too. It always ends up that way. And a lot of times they send them to me like right at the end of planting time.
Yeah.
And because it's just the way it works out. And I'm like, oh crap, where am I going to put
But if
these?
You're into container gardening and you want a bigger pepper than maybe you might normally get, peppers from heaven, very good selection. Mild peppers, very good. I'd grow it again in containers.
So that makes me think of a funny story from yesterday when I was at Under the Sun, and I was buying ornamental pepper plants and a couple other things for the front pots. And this man said, oh, you're buying those too? And he was there with his wife, and they had bought two pepper plants. And I said, I am. And he goes, you bought a bunch of them. I said, no, actually, I only bought two. It just looks like a bunch because they're a lot. And this is a big, I don't know, it's a 5-inch container. And so I think that's where it's going to stop. And then he goes, did you know that you can eat these too? And he went off rhapsodic about these peppers and told me all about how I could grow them. And if I just keep taking them off and eating them, then I can have more. And I said, well, don't you find them kind of hot? Because a lot of the ornamental peppers are super
right.
hot. And he goes, these aren't that hot. He goes, my wife and I love them, and you're going to love them too. And I thought, boy, it's fun to see somebody that enthusiastic about something.
Yeah,
right?
The ornamental peppers are edible, but they are not bred for taste.
Hot.
They are bred for their color, their size, the way they hold the pepper up high on the plant so you can actually see it. Because most peppers are hanging down in the plant. You got to go look for them. So,
yeah. I thought it was cute.
Eat them all you want, mister.
And so I won't be eating mine. I'm only going to grow poblano, which is my favorite pepper to eat. Jalapeno, because I always need one in a recipe.
Yep.
Cubanelles. Shishitos is my second favorite pepper to eat. And Big Jim, which is an Anaheim type. I'm not going to grow Anaheims and Big Jim. I'm going to grow one or the other.
Big Jim.
And we've talked about Big Jim and Terroir before and all that stuff. So I'm going to try my best not to get lured into growing a bunch of other varieties. Although I really do love the candy cane pepper. It is a really pretty pepper. And I did buy some this year.
So add candy cane to your list.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'll type it in.
And then if you did want to do containers, add peppers from heaven to your container list.
I probably won't. I'll just do these other ones in the fabric containers. And then I also wanted to say,
listeners, we need to hold D to this. We want to hold you to it.
The other thing I wanted to say is it's easier to grow chilies in Oklahoma than bell peppers. I've grown bell peppers, and they do okay.
That is true.
It's just they don't produce much because it just gets hot, and they don't handle 103-degree heat the way chilies do.
They don't. But the bell peppers here do pretty well. The one problem that I have is sometimes they'll get a blight or a rot before they turn from green to the like red or yellow or orange or whatever the final color is. So I pick a lot of them green because I just want to get them before they're rotted.
Well, and they'll also keep producing as long as you pick them green. If once you let them all go ripe, then the pepper thinks it's done its duty and it's over.
Yeah.
One thing I'm going to change next year is I'm going to grow all of the peppers on the east side of my pots, you know, run down that line in my driveway. I can't talk today. It's because I didn't eat any breakfast. You go down that driveway. And so usually I just kind of stagger everything. But this year I'm not going to do that. I'm going to grow all the peppers and eggplant and stuff on the east side so they get the sun in the morning before the great big tall tomatoes do.
Very good idea.
I think I grew more indeterminates this year. And so I noticed my peppers didn't do as well on the west side.
Indeterminate tomatoes shaded out your peppers.
Yes, I may not have said that right, but yes, that's what I was trying to say.
Very good. All righty then. That is our pepper roundup for 2022. I'm going to do the next quote.
Go for it.
We read to know we are not alone by C.S. Lewis.
And he's right, I think.
And on the bookshelf, A Year in My Garden by Jacqueline Vanderkloot. The funny story is, listeners, I was literally standing in front of my library heading in. I get a call and it's D. Hey, Carol, I'm going to switch our book this week to this A Year in My Garden because I really like it. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't have that book. I'm standing in front of the library. Let me see if they have it. And normally I have to get the books brought in from another branch. So I go in, I go to the librarian, sitting under the question mark sign. I says, normally I would just look this up on my phone, but do you have? And she says, click, 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 click. We do. Mm-hmm. And it's here at this branch. And I'm like,
yay,
what is going on? So went and followed her and boom, I had the book.
The reason I wanted to switch it is that her garden starts in September. Her book starts in September, which is very unusual. Almost all of these gardening books start in spring or start in January, one or the other. Very seldom do they start
in fall. I read another one, though, that started in September, and I'm trying to think what it was.
Well, you'll think of it. So did you read any of this? I took notes of what I read.
No, it's sitting here. I got it out from the library, and I mentioned I've been really busy, but I am going to read it because you said it was really good.
It is really good. She taught me some things that I didn't know. And that I don't get, I mean, that sounds.
You don't get schooled very often.
Not anymore. I've done this since I was, you know, in my teens. So here's some things.
So like that's like 5 decades.
Sweet. Sweet Lord. Okay. All right. So her garden is about 3 weeks ahead of mine on getting cold. Okay. And it doesn't get as cold as mine does in January and February, but it does get cold. There are things that she does that I think are really, really smart about bulbs. Of course they are because, you know, and she's self-taught. Did you know that?
I think I did know that. Now we heard her speak, I think in Chicago.
I think it was Chicago. Yeah. Our friend brought her in, whose name I can't think of. Sally brought her in.
Because Sally, you know, Ferguson brought her in.
Yeah, because she used to work for the Bulb Consortium for the Netherlands. And Jacqueline is about as famous as Pete Udolph is.
Yes. In fact,
and
she Klaus has
Dalby.
She followed Pete Udolph. She follows around to his gardens and people have her plant the bulbs in them. And so
right,
you go
because
to
he's
the
not a bulb guy.
He's not a bulb guy. So you go to the Lurie Garden in Chicago, for example, and she she facilitated the bulb planting in that particular garden.
And a lot of other gardens, too, because she talks about that in February. In January and February, she goes to various gardens and also in the fall.
She taught the method that I shared with my younger sister, and that is you mix the bulbs together, and then you throw them out into the planting bed, and where they land, you plant. And my sister looked at me and she says, are you sure? And I says, I am positive.
It's and the scatter method.
The scatter method. And she, the next spring, she says, it is so nice. And what we
it
did is
natural.
She has, there's a bed that's right by their front walk that everybody walks by to get to and from their cars. And I said, all the bulbs you bought, we're going to plant them in this one spot. Because she's like, should I put some here and some over there? And
no.
I said, one spot.
That you
will
see
all
the
see
time.
This. Yes. And it will be gorgeous. And she was like, yeah, it turned out really well.
Okay. So speaking of the scatter method, she taught me something in this book that I kind of figured out on my own. Because I also use the scatter method. But when I want to go and plant the bulbs, sometimes my garden isn't ready to be done. Okay. And one of the things she talked about is you have to cut back some of those perennials in order to do it.
You do.
Because you can't see them. You
That's
can't
correct.
See them. And so you lose your bulbs otherwise. And so that was something. And another deal about planting that I thought was really helpful in this book is she actually plants her small bulbs that naturalize, like crocuses, Chionodoxa, and Scilla, in the first half of October. For me, that would be the end of October or beginning of
February. And for me, it probably would be about the same as Jacqueline.
Yeah, I think you guys are on the same schedule. Then she plants her daffodils in the second half of October.
Yeah.
So when she does her scatter method, she scatters whatever bulb she's working on. And then she plants her tulips in November, late November, because tulips need cold soil to do well. Okay. And then she plants her alliums in December. And she said, so for tulips, they need their soil to be between 41 degrees and 50 degrees. Now, I changed this over from Celsius because she, of course, does Celsius. Then she takes her tulips and she leaves them in the ground. And she doesn't worry whether they will bloom or not. And she's also found that certain tulips are more likely to return a year later. And she said to pick those from the Darwin hybrids. And also some of the parrot ones that are related to the Darwin hybrids. And right. I wrote those down. I thought that was really good. She plants them 5 inches deep, and then she puts cow pellet manure, which is that dry cow manure. We've gotten it at various things. On top of them in March, because that's when they need it right after they flower. By the time it starts to degrade. And I thought I might actually try that because I've got some of that stuff here. You can buy those pellets, or you could use a really good high manure compost, you know, because it's the same idea. So she just leaves them in there. And actually, that's actually part of my rabbit hole, so I won't go into that. And then I asked you if you had tried Camassias because I bought some yesterday.
I have. I just have a couple of them. And again, so go back to the Chicago Botanic Garden when we went there with garden bloggers in 2009. So when we went to the entrance, they had some up by the entrance, and they had a big mass of them, pretty and blue. And we must have been there on their peak bloom day. So I had never grown them. I wanted them. I got some. So they have been in my garden for 11 years, and there's still a stand of them that comes up. I got to admit, they're in Plopper's field kind of on the side, so they sort of get missed, especially since they're next to Blue Dog Bane, and they sometimes bloom at the same time. And so those two blue flowers kind of
pattern off of each other.
Yeah. So I would definitely give them a try. They do like a wetter location.
So I'm going to plant them in this partially shaded location that has clay soil that stays wetter than other places in my garden, just because it's clay underneath. And I'm also going to add a little bit of sulfur when I plant them because they like a little bit of acidity. Or I'll take shredded leaves and bury it with them, one of the two. And then that way they'll get a little bit of acidity. Why can't I say that word? A little bit of acid.
Because I'm not even going to try. They'll get acidic.
Soil. Yeah, a little bit acidic. So I'm going to try that and just see if it works, just for fun. So that's kind of fun. Also, she talked about in the book so there's always been this big, not controversy, but discussion between garden writers about whether you should cut the leaves off your hellebores right when they're about to bloom. And I always do because
I do too.
You can't see the blooms if you don't do it. And the foliage looks like crud by the time you do it, right? So I cut them off.
That is true.
She pointed out that the leaves fall over right at that time, so it's a little easier to cut them. You want to use those snips we were talking about when you cut off hellebore leaves because it's so easy to accidentally cut off a new leaf or a bloom. But she also said that it keeps them from getting leaf spot, which is a disease.
Yeah, I probably have some leaf spot out there. But
I do.
The leaves look so bad by then, you want to get them off anyway.
Right. So the old leaves don't spread the leaf spot to the new leaves.
I have a pro tip for hellebores and Christmas decorations. You want one? You want it?
Sure.
So I thought it would be really cool in my pots out front. I usually put some evergreen branches and stuff.
Right.
I thought, well, I'll cut back some of these hellebore leaves and stick those in there for a little variety. Don't bother. They turn brown right away and look like they don't look good. So
it doesn't
get them
work,
out.
Huh? Okay.
No, good to know. That was a dumb idea.
I've done plenty of those. But that makes sense that they would turn brown on you, kind
that
of.
That is. So that is the book, A Year in My Garden by Jacqueline Vanderkloot. We recommend it. It was published in 2019, I believe. And I have just, I glanced at it after I got it. I'm going to look through it. And if I really like it, it might have to be on my buy list.
Well, I'm halfway through it, and those are the tips I got out of it after being halfway through. So I thought those were pretty good tips, some of which I didn't know. And I want to give a shout-out to Linda Brazell, which is, I think she writes Every Little World. That's her blog. I wouldn't have known about this book if I hadn't read her blog that day.
Okay. Well, give me a link to that, and we'll put it in our show notes. Okay. And before you do that, though, you must do the next quote.
Oh, I have to do that, don't I? And I was looking that up for you real quick. The next quote is, a garden is a grand teacher. It teaches patience and careful watchfulness. It teaches industry and thrift. Above all, it teaches entire trust. Gertrude Jekyll, British horticulturist. Go, Gertrude.
Go, Gertrude. So we have two pieces of dirt. I'll do the first one. And You sent me this link, but we have talked before about when the master of the house dies, someone must go tell his bees. And so there were articles kind of making fun of it, but it's an old, old tradition. And when the queen died, the royal beekeeper went out and told the hives as part of the tradition. And I thought that was sweet. You know, there's so many traditions coming out of the woodwork with the queen's death and funeral and the mourning period. It's like, well, they haven't had a monarch die for 70 years. They kept track of all these traditions for all that time. That is pretty darn good.
Well, and that tradition of telling the bees the beekeeper has died has been around since before the Middle Ages. I loved that he put black bows on the hives.
He put black bows on the hives, and they said, you know, just the bees are a member of the family, and they should be told like anybody else.
Right.
And also been reading about her last little dogs, where they're going to end up with homes. So that was kind of interesting.
Oh, I haven't read about that. You'll have to send me that.
I think Sarah Ferguson has taken a couple of them.
Well, that's nice, because I think she would be a good dog owner. So we also wanted to talk about Growing Hope, which is part of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. I have a friend who's a member of the Choctaw Nation. Her name's Karen Collier. And I read an article in the New York Times about a seed bank that is being kept by Native peoples to keep certain crops alive. But individual tribes also do it. And the Choctaw do it here. Also, the Cherokee do it. I'm sure some of the other tribes do, too. You can only get seeds of these varieties, whatever variety they're doing that year, if you're a member of the nation. And so Karen grew actually two or three things this year. She grew a corn and a squash that I know of. And she just had a really good time doing it. And she, you know, it made her feel a part of her people, which is kind of cool too.
That is very cool. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. We need to keep all of these unusual seeds alive, because you just need it. The more seed bank, the more variants you have in it, the less likely we'll all starve someday.
That is true. I'm going to hit this with this good quote. And I love this quote. I might embroider it on a pillow. I might make a sign to put outside. A good garden may have some weeds, by Thomas Fuller, an English clergyman. I'm going to make plaques. I'm going to embroider that on a pillow.
I think
I could do those indoor-outdoor pillows and put them outside on... That's my new favorite quote, Dee.
I like it because it's the truth. I don't know any good garden that doesn't have weeds. One time I had a visitor in my garden come in, and I had worked my tail feathers off to try to get it ready for couture. And she pulls out a weed that I missed, and she held it up in front of everybody and said, "Look, I pulled this for you. Thanks."
You should have said, "Oh my gosh, that rare, you didn't pull that one, did you? Oh my. Oh, no, not that. That's not a weed. That was a rare variety of, you know, whatever weed
something.
It was.
Yeah, that'd
yeah.
be awesome. That's funny.
That's a problem."
So tell me about your rabbit hole.
You know what? I was so busy, and I'm not sure what I was busy with. And my sisters who work, we went out to lunch, and my sister and I that are retired, we talked about how busy we are, and the two that works is, "We do not want to hear that you are busy. There is no way you don't know what busy." I am so busy.
Me too. Me too.
So
I don't know how I go through life. I really don't know how I ever held a full-time job. I feel like I have a full-time job anyway. By the time you do all the writing and all the other stuff we do and the garden coaching. So we'll talk about my rabbit hole, because your rabbit hole refers to my rabbit hole.
I just decided to follow you down the same rabbit hole. There you go.
Well, thanks. I'm appreciative of that. So it's about Jacqueline Vanderkloot, and she has a whole series of videos that she did in connection with this book, which I found by accident. I actually was trying to go and find the piece she did with Martha Stewart where they planted the blue bulb border under the linden trees. I think they're linden trees.
I think I have seen that.
Well, you've totally seen it because it was on the show, right? And it used to be on Martha Stewart's website. But now she's put a paywall up. And the only reason I'm mad is Martha has more money than God, first of all. And secondly, this is old content. If it were new content, you know, new stuff that she hadn't already been paid for before, but I digress. Anyway, I couldn't find it. I can probably find it on YouTube if I look hard enough. But anyway, I found some of Jacqueline's actual videos, and also I found her. She did a whole thing on bulbs when she planted them in the Lurie garden, and she did ones on her home garden and why she decides to do the things she does. And her home garden is charming. We didn't mention that about the book. It's charming. I don't really like the umbrella hawthorns, but that's just not my style. That's very Dutch. So
yeah, anyway, well, I'm going to follow you down that. I'm going to follow you down that same rabbit hole. And you have a link to her other book, Bulbs with Jacqueline Vanderkloot. I do have that book, and I actually got her to sign it, I think, when I was in Chicago. So I have that one.
She was so nice. We should say that. I mean, she was so nice.
So nice.
Thrilled to meet her. She didn't know she was famous over here. And Sally was so excited to bring her. It was one of my favorite things that we ever did in GardenCom.
That's pretty cool. All right, let's do our garden commissions. What are you doing this week, Dee? I don't want you to be sitting on your laurels, so to speak. You know, birthday weeks, several weeks past. You can't just sit there and
I didn't
revel
sit there
in
this
it all.
Week. I worked hard.
I know you did.
Yeah, and I worked hard on my birthday week, too. I cleaned out the garage.
I know you did.
I planted the blue pansies. I'm going to plant the blue pansies in the front borders. And then I'm going to weed the front borders and put down some shredded pine bark mulch because it's prettier than my mulch from the back. And I also need to pull the juniper that finally got riddled with bagworms before I realized it. I hate that little short juniper. It's one of those ones that has the yellow ends. You know, it's green and the new growth has that yellow color. I hate that thing. So I'm really glad it's gone. And I'll probably put a boxwood there instead because it's nice to have something evergreen at the end of that path when you look down it. And I am going to top off the cutting beds with some soil conditioner. And I'm still planting a few of the shrubs I bought from Bob Scott the day I was sad about my mom's best friend. And I'm down to like three. I'm down to three, Carol, out of like eight or nine. And then I've got an evergreen tree Bill and I brought back from Southwoods in Tulsa. And I'm going to plant that. And then I'm going to sit on my laurels and rest because I've got to also review a book this week. I got a lot
to
do.
So, yeah, you do. But let me go back. Were you going to plant a boxwood? I'm going to give you a challenge, Dee, to think of a shrub that will be evergreen, that will not require any annual pruning like a boxwood, but isn't going to get overly large. So you think about that.
Yeah, good luck with that. That grows in Oklahoma. I actually have to do that for people all the time in their garden coaching deal, and there aren't very many because Oklahoma is the prairie.
You'll come up with something. You'll come up with something. So in my garden, I'm going to do more weeding, some more cleanup that needs to be done. Some of the tomato plants, the goal is to have them in the trash by Thursday. Need to tend my pansies. And I have a couple of plants that I brought out from inside. And I thought, ooh, those need to go back inside. So I'm going to start making sure that the stuff I want to bring inside over winter, and there's just like four or five plants. I'm going to get those inside because it's time to do that in Indiana.
And yeah, I'm starting to bring stuff in too, into the greenhouse because it just takes a little bit.
Yeah.
And are you going to overwinter? I mean, are you going to try to rebloom your amaryllis?
I'm
trying to decide if I'm going to toss mine.
It's going poorly, but the amaryllis, they just kind of grow, and every once in a while I'll get a bloom at some odd random time. So I don't really, I treat them like a houseplant. If that makes sense.
That's interesting.
And I don't worry about whether it's reblooming or not.
So you just have big stringy leaves as a houseplant.
All right. So that was a dig. I do want to say that I think I'll go get some mums for my front porch. And that's it. We want to thank you for listening to The Garden Angelus. I hope you've hit the subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
And if you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review. That helps us get noticed by others. Could you also share our podcast with your gardening friends or just your friends? They don't even have to be gardening friends. Word of mouth is still best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our websites.
And subscribe to our new Substack newsletter. It's the one with all the links. It's thegardenangelists@substack.com, and it's also linked to in our show notes on Buzzsprout.
And if you want to help support us and keep this podcast free, which we intend to do anyway, use the affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we earn a small commission and it costs you nothing.
We certainly won't charge you for old content. It was lovely to chat with all of you over the Garden Gate today. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.